Have you asked yourself, who am I now that things have changed? Or what's next? Or why does it feel like something is missing? Do you know what you want? If so, what's holding you back? Maybe you feel stuck and wish you could get out of your own way. You're not alone. You'll get insight from every angle on these topics and more on the Tips for the Transition, the Career Roadmap podcast. Every week, you can learn the tips and proven techniques to get you out of that rut and feel more confident and resilient. So join us and eavesdrop on our conversations. Hi there. Welcome. This is Tips for the Transition, the Career Roadmap, and I'm Maria Tomas-Keegan, your host. I created this show to share resources that help women navigate career and life challenges more easily and to know that they're not alone. Every week, we co-create, me and my guest, to create or to inspire women around the world to become more confident, resilient, and brave in their careers and in their lives. So if something resonates with you as we're talking today, and you want more information, just check out the show notes below for various ways to connect with my guest and me. So unfortunately, burnout is an often talked about subject these days, and it has been for a long time. You might have a heavy workload, or you might work long hours. You might even have little control of how you do your work or the work that you do. Or you might even struggle with balancing all that work with the life that you want. The result might be burnout. Now, we've talked about how to recover from burnout many times on this podcast. But today, we're going to put a different spin on it. We are going to talk about prevention instead of treatment. And my guest today is Dr. Kristen Donnelly. She is an award-winning four-time TEDx speaker. She's an international empathy educator. I love that. And she's a researcher with two decades of experience in helping people understand the beauty in difference and the power of inclusivity. She is one of the good doctors of Abby Research, chief operating officer of their parent company, co-founder of the Community Research Institute, and an unapologetic nerd for stories of change. Plus, Kristen does a lot of writing for Forbes and Medium and Thrive Global. So I want to bring her on and introduce her to you because we're going to talk about preventing burnout today. Hello, Kristen.
Hello, Maria. How are you?
I'm great. I am amazing. Great. I'm excited for this conversation because it is a different take on every other conversation I've ever had with anybody about burnout. And I'm really excited to bring you on to share what you've learned about it. So first of all, I would love for you to tell us why this subject of burnout is so important to you.
What an incredible question. On a very basic level, it's important to me because I care about and love people. And burnout is something that has become such a buzzword right now that I'm afraid it has gotten to the point where it means nothing. And we toss it around all the time. And I believe really deeply in context and in understanding. And so it's incredibly important to me to understand burnout better so that we can actually do something about it. In a certain way, doing a lot of talking about an issue without doing some sort of root cause analysis and some more big systemic understanding of it kind of stresses me out. Like, I am a business owner and a social scientist, and so context is incredibly important to me. Additionally, it matters to me because I think we're starting the conversation at point G way too often. And I'd like to take us back to point A and really understand where it comes from, like I said, so that we can do things about it. Because burnout is not actually a disease. It's a collection of symptoms and conditions that are caused by other things. And so by treating simply the symptoms, it gets really difficult to do any sort of lasting systemic change that does prevention in the future.
Hmm. Isn't that the case with so many things? Yeah. That it's that Band-Aid approach. I've heard you say this before. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole.
Yep.
That's a powerful image for me. But we do that with so many things these days. Yeah. Try to treat the symptoms instead of digging under to get to the root cause.
Yeah, because the root cause means change. And not only do our brains hate change, like our brains are designed to keep us at stasis.
Yeah.
So that we stay safe, because the brain perceives stasis as safety. But like outside of our brains, change is hard. And life is already hard enough. Why are we doing more hard things? Hmm. So I joke all the time, and I'm, you know, I don't have data behind this, but this is just my gut. The world and Western culture in America in particular, we're not quite as obsessed with quick changes until the invention of the penicillin antibiotic. Because for the first time in the history of humanity, you could take one pill and fix a thing.
Hmm.
And when you look at the history of pharmaceuticals since then, and the kind of way that pharmaceutical advertising, thanks to Arthur Sackler, has really shaped a lot of how Americans behave in the market, it's very clear to me that we are constantly looking for the penicillin of whatever it is.
Yeah.
And the problem is, penicillin did treat the actual cause of the disease. And it got rid of, you know, it prevented another influenza epidemic. Fantastic. What it didn't do was fix the social causes of poverty that lead to more comorbidities that make people more sick. It didn't make running water significantly more, you know. So it appeared to fix this problem, but it still didn't. It just kind of did. And we've taken that model forever. Again, this is just a supposition on my part, but it really seems to fit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That seems to be the way it is. Yeah. So we've said burnout's been around for a long time. I have also heard you say that the Puritans had something to do with burnout. Tell us about that.
Oh, the Puritans. If you had told me when I first started studying religions as a sociology of religion scholar that I would spend so much of my life talking about this tiny group of separatists, I would have laughed at you, because I was like, what's so interesting about the Puritans? So essentially, in the 1600s, there was two groups of white folks kicked out of England for being a nuisance to the Church of England. One of them were the Pilgrims. They're the folks that you think of when you think of the first Thanksgiving. And they packed their ships full of beer. They were going to show up and have a bit of a party. Like they were annoying, and they were looking for freedom from the Church of England. But like, they didn't really have a plan. They just kind of rocked up. They didn't really last that long. And then come the Puritans. They get easily confused because everybody had the same funky hats and weird shoes with buckles. So like, they look the same. But the Puritans rock up, and they had a plan. Their plan was to create a city on a hill, a heaven on earth. They wanted to create a religious society. So they didn't pack their ships full of beer. They packed it full of Bibles and building supplies. And that was their goal. So why that matters to us is that this is the first group of white folks who settled America and stuck around. Jamestown and the Pilgrims, they kind of came and went. But the Puritans showed up and then stayed. So there are three important elements of the Puritan theology, which is everything in their kind of culture was, again, they wanted to build a religious society. So everything was centered around their theology. And there's a lot of things about their theology that are perfectly lovely and fine and innocuous. And, you know, they practiced a very close to what a lot of Calvinistic theology is. Now, I have a Master of Divinity. If anybody really wants to get into theology, we can. But for me, the most important things socially are three elements of their theology. One, you are only a good person if you work really hard.
Mm.
You are also only working hard means doing it all by yourself, with a couple exceptions, including barn raising, but everything else was supposed to be by yourself. And you could sleep when you were dead.
Wow.
I would imagine that sounds fairly familiar. So the thing is, like, that's it. Like, that's what they taught and that's what they believed. Yeah. And they did it to build the kingdom of God on earth.
Yep.
Fantastic. They didn't, though. They built the most capitalistic society that the world had ever seen at the time. Because the thing is, all of those principles line up really, really easily with financial success and resource accumulation.
Yep.
So before there was anybody else who showed up, any other white folks showed up, before Alexander Hamilton, you know, boarded his ship from St. Croix, the Puritans are the ones that decided what it meant to be American. To be American was to work really hard, do it all alone, and rest when you were dead.
Yeah.
I can keep going, but please interrupt me.
Yeah, no, I'm just carrying that forward to the way I was raised. Mm-hmm. You know, work ethic was a very, very strong. Mm-hmm. It was a requirement, you know, you mm-hmm. to be, like you said, to be a good person, you need to work hard. To be a person of value, mm-hmm. right? Which is, I think, the way we interpret that now. Mm-hmm. You can sleep when you're dead. I don't subscribe to that one because I need my sleep really badly. But I know people who feel that way. You know, it's like it's they're working hard, they're playing hard. Because that's the way they think they get balance and they can sleep when they're dead. And that's just a prescription for, the body breaking down, essentially. And that's what burnout is, right?
In a lot of ways, yeah. And so the other thing with America is that, you know, no one ever actually examined this system because it worked. So other immigrants would come in and be like, well, what does it mean to be American? And what does it mean to make money? Well, this is what it means, mm-hmm. and this is what it looks like. So by the time we hit the founding fathers and mothers, like, this is what it meant to be American, is to work hard and to do it alone and sleep when you were dead. And we never had another system that came in. We didn't have a state church. We didn't have anything to kind of come in and say, worship something else.
Right.
So instead, this became the American civic religion. This became what we worshiped. We worshiped resource accumulation.
Yeah.
And I don't think that means you're wealthy. I think there's a much broader definition of wealth that we can embrace. But since the 1600s, to be American is to be somebody who accumulates resources. And really, that's what it comes down to. That's what the American dream is the accumulation of resources.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons, I mean, that's why we took the land from the Native Americans, and drove all the indigenous peoples off their lands. That's why, you know, that's resource accumulation is why we enslaved Africans and Caribbean folks. And all of that is about the management and accumulation of resources. Now, that is what America tells you you need to be a good American, to be successful. The problem is your body agrees with none of that.
Right, right.
And so there, America's over here telling you, you got to do all this to be successful. And your body's over here being like, I would really like a nap. Like, this is to be successful, but I need you to change or you're going to die. Most of the time when people talk about burnout, they've already passed the point where they've ignored all of the signals from their body to say stop.
Right.
Or they've been trying to fix them with Band-Aids on bullet holes. They went on Instagram and some influencer said, spend $29.99 a month on my bath bomb and you'll fix burnout. And we've pretended that there is a solution out of burnout. There's not. There's not a explanation. I offer the Puritans as a context. But there's lots and lots of reasons why a person would burn out. And some of them are communal and some of them are individual. In the same way, solutions have to be both communal and individual.
Okay. So I've heard you say that burnout is as American as apple pie. Is that what you meant by that? That yep. it's been around since the 1600s?
It's part of what it means to be American, is to be exhausted.
Wow. You know, I'm thinking what just came to my head is we have family in Europe, living in Europe, raising kids in Europe, and we have been there to visit. And I can relate to what you just said. To be American means to be exhausted. When I think about the life they lead in Europe, which is anything but that.
And I mean, that's very similar. I really started to congeal this idea and develop this idea when I lived in Northern Ireland when I was 22.
Mm.
And I went from college. My first job after college was as a voluntary youth worker in Northern Ireland. And I taught sex ed in high schools. It was the most fun I think I'll ever have for the rest of my life. I loved that job. I talk about this in the book we're writing on the culture of burnout right now that my colleague and I are writing. But I was so angry when I first got there at how much time I thought they were wasting every day.
Oh.
And the number of tea breaks they took, the fact that the buses shut down at 6 o'clock, all of these things. Now, Northern Ireland is its whole own bundle of drama. I'm not saying it's not. I mean, I literally wrote a PhD on some of its drama, so I get it. But fundamentally, what I discovered, and this is a crass overstatement, but it shifted how I lived my life, is that the American cultural value is productivity. And the Northern Irish cultural value was family and connection and whatever family means. Now there's all of that. And then I married a fella from Northern Ireland, and I see a lot of the tug in our marriage of what I think a productive Saturday looks like and what he thinks a productive Saturday looks like, what I think a strategic way to live our lives look like and his. We've been married 10 years now, and we live here in the States now, and he's a naturalized alien, as they call them. But you know, he's still Irish. His mother is Irish. His father is Irish. He is still Irish, and he moves in those rhythms. But what really got me was, like, when I was in the office at the place I worked at, there was 3 breaks a day, a tea break in the morning, a long lunch, and a tea break in the afternoon. And in my mind, that meant we were failing. We weren't earning our paycheck. We weren't doing the right things. And then at the end of the year, I realized that we had accomplished just as much as we would have if we didn't take breaks, probably even more because we had taken breaks. I knew my coworkers way better than I knew any other coworkers I'd ever worked with before. And I went home a more balanced person than I had showed up.
Yeah.
And I got to Texas and launched into 2 master's degrees, promptly forgot everything I had learned. And then I moved back and I did my PhD and I lived in Belfast for 4 years at that point. And then some of the lessons stuck. And I tell people all the time that the best version of myself, the version of me that I missed the most, was the version that lived in Belfast, that would take whole afternoons to sit at a pub with a book and a couple friends, that would just drop what I was doing and go be with a friend, that would take long walks in the evening. I didn't have the same feeling of constantly needing to be on a hamster wheel over there that I do here.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a huge amount of, and I'm very, very privileged and blessed to have it, but I have a huge amount of responsibility. My brother and I co-own a company, a network of companies that our father started. And so by any definition, my life is stressful. But I also, by buying into the puritanical beliefs of equating my workload with my worth as a human and my personal morality, of believing that I can't, that asking for help is a weakness, and not prioritizing my own rest, I have made it more stressful than it needs to be.
Right.
And right. I have forgotten the lessons that I learned that I could be incorporating. And in the last couple of years, I've had some health issues that essentially were my body saying, if you don't stop right now, if you don't reformat some things about your life, it's going to get ugly fast.
Yeah.
And I was I'm very blessed to have a team member and a best friend who looked at me and said, this is when we start reshaping some stuff about your life.
Right.
And if you don't do it now, I will find someone to do it for you.
All right. You know, there's a very personal reason for you and personal experience, right, for you to focus on burnout as a researcher to help others. So let's talk a little bit about the prevention piece.
Yeah.
How do we stem this tide that is so, you know, it's our legacy. It feels like that. It feels like we got to do it this way. How do we change that for ourselves individually first? Because I think it has to start there, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Great question. So let me set this up by saying that all cultures are made by the people that live in them. And they shift and they change and they evolve. So just because something is the way it is right now does not mean it is how it has to be.
Right.
One of the ways we need to shift the culture, one of the ways to shift the culture, I should say, is to do individual changes. When you reformat your life in a certain way, you then show up differently in the world. And other people that resonate with that want to know what you did. And then they begin to reshape their lives. And that's a quiet, subtle way to do it. We also need some larger STEM changes, but that's a separate conversation. So right now, in terms of prevention, I have, we talked about the four R's of the things we need to prioritize in our lives to do those personal preventative changes. I should also say, I believe that everyone listening to this podcast is tired, especially because right now we are 2.5 years into a global trauma that we refer to as COVID that has been difficult and overwhelming and everything else. Our nervous systems are all out of whack, every human on the planet. So what everything action you take from here on out is both healing and preventative. This isn't a linear thing. This is a constant cycle and a practice that I'm going to introduce. So these four elements of a practice of living a life of balance rather than burnout. And balance I refer to as a controlled wobble. It isn't a state of being. It's a controlled wobble. You're going to fall. You're going to screw it up. You're just going to get back up and continue to wobble. So the first one is rest. The first R is rest. You need to sleep. I have eschewed sleep for many years because there was too much else to do. What do you mean I have to sleep? That sounds like a waste of time. Spoiler alert, it's not. Spoiler alert, your body needs sleep. So do whatever it means to prioritize that, if that's the R you need to look at most. Buy the fancy podcast mattress. Get a sleep study done to see if you have apnea. Start taking blue lights out of your bedroom. Pick a thing. Start somewhere. But actual physical rest is a big part of this. The second R is something I refer to as rejuvenation. Create time in your life to do things that make you happy and potentially serve no purpose other than to make you happy. You are not a human doing, you are a human being, and you get to have joy here on this planet. So my rejuvenation strategies are things like going to Disney, both world and land. I love Disney. Going to Broadway shows, sitting on the beach and listening to the ocean, playing with my niece and nephew, going to baseball games, which is also self-flagellation because I follow the Phillies, but baseball is very joyful for me. These are all things that remind me that I'm a human, having a human experience and not a productive cog in a capitalistic machine. The third one is realignment. Now, this is where we need to address the fact that even if you are not a religious person, there is a part of you that is spiritual. Everybody has a spirit within them. And this is kind of that piece. So for some people, this will be a Sabbath. For other people, this will have other language. But this piece is remembering who you are in the universe. You are beloved. You are important. You are not so important that you cannot delegate something or take a nap. So for me, that my Pilates practice is very realigning for me because for an hour, as many times a week as I can handle it. I focus on my breath and my body movement. And I remember that no matter who else I am to everybody else, fundamentally, I am a human who has to breathe. And if I lose that part of me, everything else is lost. Realignment reminds you that you are a child of the universe. And you are absolutely beloved by the people around you. You are a human in a community, all of those things. But you are not so mandatory that you can't stop. And that balance is a constant realignment. That's why I call it realigning. You're going to wobble out of it. You're going to forget. You're going to get caught up in something. So creating a practice where maybe once a week, in a lot of faith traditions, Sabbath is once a week, 3 minutes a day, 3 minutes every other day, something where you realign who you are in the grand scheme of things, both in a positive way and in a limiting way. Then the final one is reconnection, which is the reminder that you are not meant to do this all alone. The Puritans were liars. And there's a reason they largely died out, because you actually can't do life by yourself. We are psychologically, physiologically created and born and wired and whatever you believe. The human body does not function without connection to other people. So you do that. So those are the four things I encourage you to cultivate, both as healing measures and as preventative ones. Find and protect your rest. Pick and guard moments of rejuvenation. Cultivate realignment. And make sure you're constantly reconnected to the folks around you.
It sounds so simple.
Everything that we need in life is simple and really hard to put in practice.
Yeah, everything. It's just not right. It's not easy to figure out what it is you individually need and then go do that on a consistent basis.
It's so hard.
I am really good at trying to get the rest I need. It doesn't always work for me. Last night, I couldn't fall asleep to save my life. So, I saw 2:30, 3 o'clock roll around, and I still hadn't fallen asleep. So the rest part, I didn't do real well yesterday. The joy part, I love that, rejuvenating, bringing joy and happiness into your life, figuring out what are the little things that do that for you. Mm-hmm. I love that. It really doesn't take much. I have animals in my house. They are my kids. But they bring me such joy just watching them. The two cats, brothers, race down the hallway, all just chasing each other. And it brings a smile to my face. That's joy to me. It doesn't really take much, does it?
No, and I think there's small moments and big moments. Like, I don't know, it's funny. One of the ways I met one of my best friends was that, and a couple of my best friends actually, was that we were really involved in writing fan fiction, which is a really a big, I don't know, I've been writing fan fiction since I was 13 and I still do. But there was all these people that would ask us all the time, like, Shirley, you're going to publish this, right? Like, you're going to strip all the characters' names out of it and publish it. And I'm like, no. Because I need something in my life that is fun and brings me joy that I don't have any accountability to someone else for, that I don't have to produce on a deadline, that I don't have to make, it doesn't have to make anybody else happy.
You just reminded me of that's exactly how my father described to me why he paints.
Yeah.
He's gone now, but he was a prolific artist and excellent. And he dabbled in all media. And my home is his gallery. My brother's home is his gallery too. There's a lot of stuff. But when every time we said, you should sell this, he went, oh, no, no.
Yeah.
No, no. This is what I do for me.
Yeah.
And I never really understood that. Until I took up a hobby of my own that I just do for me.
Yeah. And I think this is one of the one of the nastier things that has happened, I think, in internet culture is this belief that you can take a hobby and turn it into a side hustle. And
you maybe could.
You can. I'm a good writer and I'm very good at writing fiction. I am positive that I could find a publisher to publish a romance novel that I wrote.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Here's the things that would then happen. I would start having to care about how many copies it sold. Yeah. I struggle enough to know how many people like read it on Archive of Our Own. I don't need money attached to that. Other people would start to have opinions about my characters. I wouldn't know how to let that go. Like, this isn't how I'm wired, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Erin does cross stitch and gardens. And like, that's finding something that either you can do every day. So like, I have tiny things I do every day for sure.
Yeah.
But then also I encourage people, like, Americans take the least amount of vacations anywhere in the world. We have the lowest proportion amount of vacations. Take the damn vacation. Take it. Prioritize it. Come up with something you're excited about.
Yeah.
I don't care if that and like, I think staycations are beautiful things. I really do. I don't know too many people that can cultivate actual rejuvenation in their own homes, because all we do is like see our to-do lists. So do something where for at least 2 days you're out of your house. Like, but I also want to bring up the thing that you said at the very beginning where you said, I didn't do great on my rest today. More than anything, this is a mindset shift. That when you think of these four R's, you can kind of wake up in the morning and go, okay, so I need more rest in the future in order to make sure I stay in balance. Not, oh my God, I totally failed at my R last night and I now need to checklist and figure out a different way to do this.
Yeah.
I am feeling a little bit overwhelmed right now. Let me do a mental and internal inventory and see what I need to prioritize for a little bit first.
Yeah.
It's a mindset shift from being a human doing, and this is, we haven't talked about women, but women, my God, are significantly proportionally more burned out than men because we are coded to be caregivers from the time we are tiny, tiny babies.
Right.
But there's male burnout is real. I'm not saying it's not, just proportionately it tends to be a woman issue more than men. You need to have things that remind you that you are a human being and not a human doing. And that's what my four R's break down to.
Right. Yeah. And the realignment one resonated with me. I talk about this a lot with my clients, getting centered on what's really important to you, those values. So the difference in the values between Europe being family as at the top of their list, and making money or being busy for those of us here in the States, seems to be prevalent, more prevalent, but getting centered on who are you now? Things change all the time. Change is not comfortable. And we evolve as things change. So who are you now that things are changed? And what do you care about most now that things are changed? Because those values shift as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So get that realignment piece is so critical for anyone who is going through any kind of transition. Mm-hmm. That's my expertise. That's, I see this all the time.
Yeah.
And I have been through it myself many times. So just that realignment piece, you can't separate any one of these four. They have to come together. They have to be considered. Absolutely. Yeah. This is what you call it, balance. I call it harmony.
Yeah.
This is just how, if you put all of these things together on a regular enough basis, consistently enough, you will start to feel like your life is more harmonious.
In a very certain way, you know, Erin and I teach that empathy is a mindset as well, that it's not feeling the emotions of other people's. It's a mindset to choose to understand others rather than assuming things about them. And the same practice for yourself. And people ask us all the time, like, why should we do it?
Yeah.
And I would say, like, why, you know, people say that about the four R's. Maybe, I don't know, they might not react that way. I've only really spoken about this in public like 3 or 4 times because we were saving it for the book.
I'm honored.
But now I'm like, no. I want to tell people before they read the book.
Yeah, my audience will be so blessed by this. Oh,
thank you. Honestly, once you get into the practice of it, life gets a lot less stressful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you start to feel more in control. And what we crave as humans more than anything is control of our own self.
Yeah.
And so, like, when I started practicing empathy and choosing to remember that other people are people, not on my terms, but on their terms.
Right.
I got a lot less angry all the time. I could scroll past things on Twitter very easily and not, like, turn it into an outrage machine. Like, oh, that person believes that. I don't agree with it. They're still a person.
That's
amazing.
Right.
Go with God and go elsewhere.
That's
and
right.
As I've been doing this, the last 5 months of my life have been really intensely focusing on all four of those R's, and how I've literally reshaped most of my life in the last 5 months, and the rhythms I move in and how I do that. And I was just this past weekend, for the first time after all that work and this constant work, I had a couple hours where I sat and I was fully present in what I was enjoying. And I could feel like the wind on my face and the crowd around me. I was at a baseball game and it was gorgeous weather and my husband was with me and I just got to be. I wasn't doing my to-do list in my head. I wasn't checking my phone constantly. I got to be. And it disappeared pretty quickly. It only lasted for a couple hours. I'm still new in this process, but I missed it when it went away.
Yeah.
And now that I know what that feels like, where I can just be.
Yeah.
Good Lord, I'll do anything to keep that feeling going. I should say, brains are weird places and it's cyclical and weird. So, like, I'm having a terrible brain day today. Hopefully tomorrow I'll have a better one. The best advice I can give anybody who wants to start on this journey or continue on this journey is that bad days are not failures.
Yeah.
Because your worth as a person is not tied to your production.
Yep. Yep. That's so, so true. That is so true. Our value. I'm so happy that we're having this conversation.
Me too.
There are so many things that are tangential to this conversation. Mm-hmm. The last of the four is reconnection. And I know you talk a lot about inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit more about what burnout has to do with inclusion.
I love that question. And no one's ever asked me before. So thank you for allowing me to exposit on this. One of the ways that we maintain connection is to remember that the way that we do humanity, the way that we do life, is not the only way to do it. That there are lots of ways to human, that there are lots of things to believe. And so part of burnout prevention and recovery can also mean, oh my God, this thing that I've been doing forever that I hate, I don't have to keep doing. There's other ways to human. This incredible pressure I have to raise my kid this exact way that isn't working for my kid. Oh my God, I could find another way to help my kid. This medicine I've been on that everybody on Instagram told me I have to be on isn't working. Cool, I don't have to be on it. So that's a big thing, a big piece of it. And in order to have those conversations, you need to know people. And in order to know people, you have to understand that they are people. The way that we talk about inclusion is drawing a very distinct difference here between the idea of tolerance, the idea of diversity, and the idea of inclusion. So I loathe the word tolerance. I actually gave a TED talk where the subtitle was "Tolerance is Garbage." Because all tolerance is the belief that someone else is alive because it's illegal to kill them. That's it. You don't engage with that person. You don't do anything else with that person. You go, oh, I tolerate you. Think about that. If someone looked at you and said, I tolerate you, how would you feel? You would feel crappy.
You know, it's very interesting. That's a question I ask a lot of my clients. What are you tolerating?
And it's, you're asking them that because you want them to kind of get rid of it.
Yes.
Or to change it.
Yes.
So we had all these bumper stickers in the 90s that were like, coexist. No, friends. That got us here. So then the other thing I want to talk about is diversity really quickly. And I should say, I love diversity. I think diversity is amazing. We cannot grow it because it already exists. So even though, Maria, you and I look very visually like we are, you know, we both look the same, maybe we have similar, you know, education backgrounds based on how we're talking. And people might look at this podcast and say, oh, there's no diversity there. It's two white ladies. Because visually, we may look the same. Couple different things there. That may not be true. And even if it is true, that doesn't mean that we have the same life experiences. We have different careers. We live in different parts of the world. We're different generations. We have different trainings. You have animals. I do not. We might have very different feelings about, I don't know, like how to make a cheesecake. I don't care. We are very, very diverse, just the two of us.
Right.
And so if you're going into, as you're in an office and they're like, we need a diversity initiative. You don't. What you need is an inclusion initiative. And you don't even really need an initiative. You need a mindset. And what inclusion means is that everybody gets to show up to your life on their terms. Hmm. No one is a token anybody. Everybody gets to be their full selves on their terms. And the best way I know how to explain this is with a little bit of my own personal examples. So some of my intersections, we call them, thanks to Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw, who gave us that word, are that, you know, I'm a white, entirely overeducated, to be honest, overeducated, middle-class white lady who's married. There are some rooms that I go into where the most important thing about me is that I own a business. And so possibly talking about my husband or sharing the fact that I lived overseas or sometimes even bringing up my PhD is not necessary to that conversation, to that relationship. Other times I'm in a conversation with somebody and the only thing that matters is that I have been watching Liverpool football for 20 years. And yes, I do remember the last time we were in a championship. I get to show up on my terms and I have that privilege because I'm a white lady and we get to do that a lot. There are still rooms I walk into that I am the woman before I am anything else. There's rooms I walk into where I'm the fat person before I'm anything else. And those are the kind of rooms that I'd like to get rid of. Mm-hmm. I'd like to create spaces where everybody gets to be who they are in their own terms. Because the thing is, who someone is, not their opinions, not their actions, who somebody identifies as is innately not a threat to you.
Right.
Like humanity is not pie. Like you're not going to run out of pieces here. We can talk about opinions and actions and behaviors in a different conversation, but identities are not a threat. Innately.
Yeah.
And so I should say with some exceptions, if you identify as a terrorist, that is a challenge. But like on the whole, if you identify emotionally as a Nazi, that's going to be real difficult. But if you identify as a queer person, you're not a threat to heterosexual people. Right. If you identify as a mother, you're not a threat to childless people. Like it's, we always make this too complicated. Everybody gets to be a human. It's hard enough, man. Like I joked with you before we started, no one gets out of this thing alive.
Right.
Why are we making it harder for ourselves and each other people?
You know, and what you're talking about here is judgment, right? And,
yeah.
And we reserving judgment.
It's hard, but we need to
hard.
Do it.
It's yeah. hard. It's because I think it's part of that American as apple pie kind of thing as well.
It's also biological. Like we need to acknowledge that too. There's parts of our psyche that have not evolved. And originally back in the day, you know, hunters and gatherers and clans and you really wanted to very quickly categorize people because that other person may have an axe. So like Ooh. You want really quickly to be able to do it. So that's great. Like innately you're going to be biologically drawn to people that your brain thinks are like you and are safe. That's awkward. The good news is you can rewrite your brain. You are more powerful than your instincts.
Right.
And so you can choose to say, why do I think that person is unsafe? Is it actually because I know that person and that person is unsafe? Or do they look like somebody else who was once unsafe in my life? And therefore I have decided that all people that look like that are unsafe.
Right. Right. Yeah.
We talk about this with kids and dogs. Like, why don't we talk about it with other humans more? Because it's hard and it's awkward.
It is hard.
And it makes us feel ashamed.
And it doesn't, this idea of inclusion doesn't come naturally. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem, right? That's part of the root cause.
Mm-hmm. Being a human is a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. It is a lot of work. And we don't get it right all the time. But giving ourselves grace and practicing the four R's that you shared with us today is a really good start. A really good start. I wish we could talk about this for longer than we have today.
Well, we'll just have to have more conversations.
Yeah. That's Kristen just told me that she and her colleague are writing a book. She mentioned it. And when the book gets published in the fall, Kristen's coming back as a guest.
I already can't wait.
We will talk more about this then, this idea of not having to recover from burnout, but taking control of things that you can control now. And preventing it. I love this. Okay, so on every episode, Kristen, we end it with tips or key takeaways from my guest. So you're on. What are yours?
Oh, amazing. Being a human is really hard. None of us actually know how to do it. We're all making it up as we go along. So that means giving yourself grace and giving grace to other people. The person that cut you off in traffic was not doing it to personally offend you.
Right.
Just take a deep breath. Remember that being a human is hard. So that's one.
Love that.
And two, find something that makes you happy and do it today. Find something that makes you happy and do it today. And the third thing to remember is that you are loved. You are cherished. You are wanted. You are important. And if your brain is doing all of the work right now to say, no, I'm not, she doesn't know me, here's the thing she doesn't know about me, my brain does those too. And that's our brains being liars. You are loved. And if you're not sure why I'm saying that, talk to the people around you, and they can probably tell you why they love you. Mm.
Three really simple, they're very powerful things. Give yourself grace, right? Things are, being human is hard. And we all struggle with this, right? I think the third one then comes into play here, right? Don't try doing it alone. Mm-hmm.
Check
out with the people who you care most about, who love you and whom you love, and, you know, make a pact, right? Work together. Decide what it is you got each individually want to do, and hold each other accountable for that. You know, check in with each other. It doesn't have to be a competition. It is a collaboration. I think if we collaborate more with the other human beings on this planet, maybe we'll stop being more human doers.
It would be nice. The world is figuratively and literally on fire.
Yes.
We don't have time to play games or stroke egos.
Yeah.
It's time to remember who you are and remember that no one gets to decide who that is but you.
Yep. Yeah, that is such a powerful statement to end on. I appreciate that you said that, Kristen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. This has been, for me, an enlightening conversation. And you've brought some pretty simple things to the surface for us today. And if we work on those four things, one at a time, one little step at a time, we can make a big difference in our lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. I know that other people that are watching are going to want to know how to reach out to you. What's the one best way for them to do that, Kristen?
Well, gosh, our website's probably the best. It is Abby, A-B-B-E-Y hyphen research.com. That's also our name on all the socials. Abby, A-B-B-E-Y research. Just find us.
That's fabulous. And all of those links are going to be in the show notes. So if you forget that, you can check out the show notes and get in touch with Kristen again. So Kristen, thank you again for joining us.
My absolute joy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And for those watching and listening, I really appreciate that you are a part of this community. And if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave a comment, click a star, whatever you can do to let us know what you're thinking and feeling. And as I said at the top of the show, I love creating and sharing resources for women. Plus, as a career and life coach, I work with women to help them navigate challenging times more quickly and gracefully. So if something in this episode resonates and you would like a fresh perspective, reach out to one of us. Let's have a talk. The links to connect with us, as I said, are below in the show notes. And I invite you to continue this conversation in my private Facebook group, The Career Transition Roadmap. Check the link below for that as well. And then let's meet again here next Wednesday. We do this every week, live on YouTube, Facebook, and LinkedIn, and soon in the fall on Roku and all the other big TV channels. So I believe it's just our time to thrive. So let's do that together. Till next time, I'm Maria Tomas Keegan, helping you turn transition into triumph.